from ABC News, World News This Week. I'm Chuck Sievertson in New York. Coming up, the COVID-19 death toll in the U.S. surpasses 150,000.
As the fight over opening schools rages on.
Another congressman tests positive for coronavirus.
I'm asymptomatic. I don't have any of the symptoms that are listed.
President Trump proposes an election delay.
Do I want to see a date change? No, but I don't want to see a crooked election.
A final farewell to Congressman John Lewis.
America was built by people like them. America was built by John Lewis.
While baseball struggles, basketball tips off.
Ball's up.
And the NBA is back.
The people and events that made headlines when World News This Week continues. A somber marker in the COVID-19 pandemic. More than 150,000 American lives have been lost to the coronavirus since it first entered the country. ABC's Marcus Moore says even though some states are seeing cases slow, deaths are rising.
The youngest in Florida, 9-year-old Kimora Lynham, and 45-year-old nurse practitioner Samantha Hickey on the front lines in Idaho. As the nation's death toll grows, the Department of Homeland Security identifying 98 hotspots flaring up in 30 states. In Connecticut, a 77% increase in cases, with 40% of those under 30 years old. And New Jersey, seeing a staggering 112% increase from previous weeks. Dr. Anthony Fauci telling our Dr. Jen Ashton he's seeing troubling trends in several states.
For example, Ohio, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Indiana, which are starting to show that very subtle increase in percent positives among the total tested, which is a surefire hint that you may be getting into the same sort of trouble with those states that the southern states got into trouble with.
In Texas, the virus claiming more than 6,000 lives since the beginning of the pandemic, as the fight over opening schools rages on. Vice President Pence visiting a private school in North Carolina, taking off his mask for a time to talk to kids.
We really do believe it's in the best interest of our children to be back in the classroom.
And in Florida, 51-year-old veteran Michael Moore losing his battle with the virus after a month-long fight in the hospital.
ABC's Marcus Moore. Among those who lost the battle with COVID-19 this week was former Republican presidential candidate Herman Cain at the age of 74. More from ABC's John Carl.
Cain grew up poor but made a fortune in the restaurant business, the CEO of Godfather's Pizza. He launched an improbable campaign for president 9 years ago with a catchy economic plan.
Remember, the 999 is a 9% business flat tax, 9% personal income flat tax, and a 9% national sales tax.
And even more improbably, he briefly emerged as the front runner, perhaps the most successful black Republican presidential candidate in history.
ABC's Jonathan Carl. Cain attended President Trump's Tulsa rally in June and was photographed not wearing a mask. It isn't officially confirmed where Cain contracted the virus. ABC News senior congressional correspondent Mary Bruce says COVID-19 made an appearance on Capitol Hill this week when Republican Congressman Louis Gohmert announced he's tested positive for the coronavirus.
The Capitol is cracking down. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi issuing a mask mandate.
Members and staff will be required to wear masks at all times in the hall of the House.
A new policy to respond to new concerns after Congressman Louis Gohmert tested positive.
I'm asymptomatic. I don't have any of the symptoms that are listed as part of COVID-19.
The Texas Republican has frequently been spotted on the Hill without a mask. On Tuesday, he was seen walking alongside Attorney General Bill Barr, neither of them in a mask. Gohmert, a staunch ally of the president, only learned he was positive when he was required to take a test before boarding Air Force One.
Masks really complicate things. This is the first time in American history when we have punished or restricted people who were not sick.
Sources say he's even scolded his staff for wearing them. And without evidence, he's now questioning whether wearing a mask led him to getting sick.
I can't help but wonder if by keeping a mask on and keeping it in place that if I might have put some germs, some of the virus onto the mask and breathed it in. I don't know.
Doctors have made it clear masks are crucial to help fight the spread of the virus. Gohmert will now be quarantining at home in Texas and is promising to wear a mask, quote, religiously.
ABC's Mary Bruce. The Senate is still trying to cobble together a fourth COVID economic stimulus package. Republicans led by Majority Leader Mitch McConnell made a last-minute attempt Thursday to extend extra jobless benefits that have now expired.
Republicans want to continue this aid before it expires, but the Democratic leader says, let them eat salt.
Republicans want to cut the $600 weekly benefit to $200, but Democrats, led by Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, say it's not enough and now it's too late.
For 10 weeks, we have asked the leader to negotiate. And now, finally, they've woken up to the fact that we're at a cliff, but it's too late.
The Senate is up against the clock trying to get a stimulus deal before the August recess. There is some encouraging news on the COVID front as Moderna, Pfizer, and Johnson & Johnson announced they're all moving into the next phase of vaccine trials.
Dr. Anthony Fauci says he's cautiously optimistic a vaccine for the coronavirus will be available by the end of the year, noting a study showing its early effectiveness.
Because in the early studies in human, the phase one study, it clearly showed that individuals who were vaccinated mounted a neutralizing antibody response that was at least comparable and in many respects better than what we see in convalescent serum from individuals who have recovered from COVID-19.
Fauci urged Americans to sign up for vaccine trials, saying 250,000 people have indicated their interest. Catherine Falders, ABC News, Washington.
New signs this week of just how strained the American economy is thanks to the pandemic.
The U.S. economy shrank at a rate of 33% in the spring, the worst economic contraction on record. The Commerce Department said the decline reflected the response to COVID-19. Nobody bought anything. There were sharp pullbacks in personal consumption, also exports and spending by state and local governments. At the same time, more Americans lost a job. The Labor Department said another 1.4 million Americans filed new claims last week for unemployment benefits.
ABC's Aaron Katursky in New York. Not long after the economic reports were released, President Trump took to Twitter, raising the idea of postponing the November 3rd presidential election. ABC's Terry Moran.
No president has ever said anything like it, but President Trump, behind in the polls with a cratering economy and a pandemic out of control, tweeting, "With universal mail-in voting, 2020 will be the most inaccurate and fraudulent election in history. It will be a great embarrassment to the USA. Delay the election until people can properly, securely, and safely vote." Later, the president tried to explain what he meant.
Do I want to see a date change? No, but I don't want to see a crooked election. This election will be the most rigged election in history if that happens.
That's a flip-flop. In April, Trump said this.
I never even thought of changing the date of the election. Why would I do that? November 3rd. It's a good number. No, I look forward to that election.
Trump's statement about delaying an American election was shot down immediately by Democrats and Republicans, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell in an interview in Kentucky.
Never in the history of the country, through wars, depressions, and the Civil War, have we ever not had a federally scheduled election on time.
But Joe Biden has been warning for weeks Trump might try to use the pandemic to delay or delegitimize the election.
It's my greatest concern, my single greatest concern. This president's going to try to steal this election. This is a guy who said that all mail-in ballots are fraudulent, voting by mail. While he sits behind the desk in Oval Office and writes his mail-in ballot to vote in the primary.
The date of the presidential general election is set by Congress. One sector that's helping to prop up the economy is big technology. Amazon, Apple, and Facebook each reported stronger profits for the latest quarter than Wall Street expected. The CEOs of those three companies, plus Google, appeared on Capitol Hill this week.
Their products are part of our everyday lives, from phones to online socializing and shopping. The most powerful CEOs of the tech industry testifying at an antitrust hearing.
Having fake and harmful content on our platform does not help our business.
CEO Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook recently facing penalties over privacy, now pressured to reduce hate speech and fake posts.
And we've built AI systems and, as I mentioned, have tens of thousands of people working on safety and security with the goal of getting this stuff down.
When it comes to selling buyer information when pressed, CEO's Amazon's Jeff Bezos telling lawmakers,
"We have a policy against using seller-specific data to aid our private label business, but I can't guarantee you that that policy has never been violated."
The House Judiciary Committee investigating whether the tech companies may have too much power. Michelle Franz in ABC News.
Attorney General William Barr appeared before a House panel this week for over 5 hours of tense testimony. ABC News Chief Justice Correspondent Pierre Thomas.
Attorney General William Barr under attack.
In your time at the department, you have aided and abetted the worst failings of the president.
For the first time taking questions from the House Judiciary Committee, Barr under fire on several fronts. Democrats accusing him of trying to help the president in his reelection campaign, sending law enforcement to Democratic-led cities.
Yes or no? Have you discussed the president's reelection campaign with the president or with any White House official or any surrogate of the president?
Well, I'm not going to get into my discussions with the president, but I've made it clear that I would like to pick the cities based on law enforcement need and based on neutral criteria.
But you can't.
But Barr saying the violence in Portland justifies federal action.
What unfolds nightly around the courthouse cannot reasonably be called protest. It is, by any objective measure, an assault on the government of the United States.
Republicans helping Barr make his case.
Are peaceful protests violent, Mr. Attorney General?
No.
Do peaceful protests destroy businesses?
No.
Do peaceful protests injure officers?
No.
Democrats were not having it, accusing Barr of a double standard.
There is a real discrepancy in how you react as the Attorney General, the top cop in this country, when white men with swastikas storm a government building with guns. There is no need for the president to, quote, activate you because they're getting the president's personal agenda done.
Barr also pressed about election interference.
Is it ever appropriate, sir, for the president to solicit or accept foreign assistance in an election?
It depends what kind of assistance.
Is it ever appropriate for the president or presidential candidate to accept or solicit foreign assistance of any kind in his or her election?
No, it's not appropriate.
Oregon Governor Kate Brown and the Trump administration struck a deal to draw down the number of U.S. agents guarding a federal courthouse from protesters following 2 weeks of violent clashes. Portland Police Chief Chuck Lovell.
It's been a long 2 months. We've had people working hard every night for the last 2 months. We've made over 400 arrests during this time period.
A new ABC News Ipsos poll finds less than one-third of the country believes that sending federal officers to respond to demonstrations in cities makes the situation better. A week of tributes and remembrances for Congressman John Lewis culminated on Thursday with a funeral service in Atlanta. ABC's Steve Osunsami was there.
This was the tearful goodbye in Atlanta to an honorable man and lifelong public servant who once bled for the right of black Americans to vote. John Lewis was the great-grandson of slaves, and at his funeral, in the middle of this pandemic, were three U.S. presidents who came to pay their respects.
John Lewis was a walking rebuke to people who thought, well, we ain't there yet, we've been working a long time. Isn't it time to bag it? He kept moving.
Listen, John and I had our disagreements, of course. But in the America John Lewis fought for, and the America I believe in, differences of opinion are inevitable elements and evidence of democracy in action.
His relationship with President Barack Obama was an important one. Like many black Americans, Lewis was in tears the night history was made and Obama was elected. In his eulogy, Obama pointed to this important moment, the bloody Sunday on this bridge in Alabama, when Lewis nearly lost his life at the hands of police while marching for voting rights. It was months later when the laws changed and many in his own family were able to vote for the first time.
This idea that any of us ordinary people, a young kid from Troy, can stand up to the powers and principalities and say, no, this isn't right, this isn't true. This isn't just. We can do better. America was built by people like them. America was built by John Lewis's.
The former president argued that forces are still trying to suppress the vote today, right now, in November's election.
Even as we sit here, there are those in power who are doing their darndest to discourage people from voting by closing polling locations and targeting minorities and students with restrictive ID laws and attacking our voting rights with surgical precision, even undermining the Postal Service in the run-up to an election that's going to be dependent on mail-in ballots so people don't get sick.
Outside, people watched and waved in the heat. Lewis was beloved and was buried in an Atlanta cemetery founded by freed slaves who at the time had nowhere else to bury their dead with dignity.
Former President Jimmy Carter sent condolences in writing. A federal appeals court has overturned the death sentence of Johar Tsarnaev, the man convicted in the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing.
Lawyers for Johar Tsarnaev argued that intense media coverage made it impossible to have a fair trial in Boston, and they pointed to the social media posts from two jurors that suggested they had strong opinions before the 2015 trial started. The first U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals finds that the trial judge did not meet the standard to determine each juror's exposure to pretrial publicity. Three people were killed in the Boston Marathon bombing. Another 260 were injured. The appellate court ordered a new jury and panel to decide whether Tsarnaev should, in fact, be put to death for the attack. Lionel Moyes, ABC News.
The Supreme Court announced this week that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was readmitted to the hospital after undergoing a minimally invasive liver procedure. More from ABC's Janae Norman.
This is the second time this month that we're learning that she has been in the hospital. Her spokeswoman saying this latest hospitalization was to undergo a follow-up to a liver procedure done here last year when she was treated for a cancerous tumor on her pancreas. Doctors say it should help minimize the risk for future infections. Earlier this month, the 87-year-old justice revealing she's undergoing bi-weekly chemotherapy to treat a recurrence of liver cancer. She says that that's going well. And thus far, Ginsburg's health battles have not interfered with her ability to participate in official business. When she was hospitalized back in May, she joined oral arguments by phone.
ABC's Janae Norman. Authorities have arrested a Florida teen for July's Twitter hack.
17-year-old Graham Ivan was, prosecutors said, the mastermind of last month's hack of Twitter that caused widespread outages for verified users. The cyber attack also posted Bitcoin information on the Twitter feeds of notable people like Joe Biden and former President Barack Obama. Ivan was hit with 30 felony charges. Two others were also charged in the hack.
ABC's Aaron Katursky in New York. An early morning freight train derailment outside of Phoenix, Arizona, sent a plume of black smoke into the sky and a hazardous chemical into the ground. More from ABC's Clayton Sandell.
The flaming freight train inferno outside Phoenix, Arizona, derailing on a bridge in Tempe. Part of that bridge collapsed, a mess of twisted metal, tracks, and train cars falling into a park below. Nearly 100 firefighters raced to the scene as flames raced to engulf cars loaded with lumber, grain, and other products. Union Pacific says tanker cars that fell off the bridge contain a hazardous and highly flammable chemical. The fire department says one tanker is leaking and is using heavy equipment to pull the car upright, stop the leak, and prevent another fire. As flames raged, a light rail passenger train on a nearby bridge slowly pushed its way through the smoke. Valley Metro Rail telling us it was safer for this final train to pass through than stop on the bridge. Federal investigators now working to figure out why the derailment happened.
ABC's Clayton Sandell. Florida declared a state of emergency ahead of Hurricane Isaias, which toppled trees, destroyed crops, and caused widespread flooding and small landslides in the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico as a tropical storm.
It's done some serious damage to Puerto Rico, especially the western part of that island, to the point where they had to carry kids out on their shoulders to higher ground. Easily over a half a foot of rain there, and certainly feet of flooding, flash flooding to the max, with mudslides happening there on the western part of that island. They were in a drought, obviously not anymore, at least there.
ABC News senior meteorologist Rob Marciano.
Ball's up, and the NBA is back.
The NBA season restarted on Thursday after a four-month COVID-19 delay. Teams have been isolated at ESPN's Wide World of Sports complex near Orlando.
After tip-off, the game unlike anything we've ever seen.
Do you think a player can talk smack with a virtual fan, or that's not going to happen?
With virtual fans in the stands, coaches no longer required to wear suits while living in the bubble, and the referees now using whistle covers.
ABC's Kenneth Moten. So far, the league says no player has tested positive for COVID. The same can't be said for Major League Baseball, which was forced to cancel games for six teams because several players tested positive. ESPN senior Major League Baseball insider Jeff Passan.
This is, in many ways, a failure by everybody involved. If you want to point fingers, you go around the room, you go, that guy, that guy, that guy, that guy, that guy, that guy, that guy. And you wouldn't be wrong.
The MLB expects to make up the games. A successful launch for NASA, which is headed back to Mars.
And liftoff.
It's the biggest and most sophisticated Mars rover ever built. It's the size of a car, and it launched off from Florida's Cape Canaveral Thursday. NASA's Perseverance is an ambitious project. Once it's on the surface, it'll conduct a host of experiments, including the launch of the first helicopter on the planet. It'll also collect soil samples that are expected to come back to Earth on a later mission so scientists can scour them for signs of microbial life. It could be the beginning of the end of the question, are we alone? Mark Remillard, ABC News.
Coming up.
17,000 hours in front of a television camera, is that enough for you?
Remembering Reej, when World News This Week continues.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Television host Regis Philbin was buried this week at the University of Notre Dame in a private funeral service. The TV icon died at the age of 88. ABC's David Muir looks back on Philbin's life and legacy.
Regis Philbin was born and raised in the Bronx in New York City. Serving in the Navy, his career in TV began off camera on The Tonight Show in the 50s. In the 60s, he was a sidekick on The Joey Bishop Show, then doing sports.
John Huffnagel will be the quarterback when the Broncos take the field.
Reporting from the red carpet.
Did you get this dress?
Well, I had this dress made just for this.
And how? Everything was
I wanted to look like old Hollywood.
2 decades later, in the 80s, live with Regis and Kathy Lee, and the moment they went national.
And just in case people don't know who we are, we should introduce ourselves.
This is Regis and I'm Kathy Lee.
That's right.
Together for 15 years, Regis would then spend more than a decade with Kelly Ripa, making Americans smile every morning. Who wants to be a millionaire?
Final answer? Final answer? Is that your final answer? This is the final answer heard all around the world. He's won $1 million.
Kelly Ripa paying tribute.
He was always the foil of his stories. You know, he would tell a story, and he was always the person that failed in the story. A lot of people build themselves up to be like the great heroes of their stories. He was so self-deprecating.
Regis would set a Guinness World Record for the most time on camera, and Katie Couric asking about his legacy.
I hope to be remembered most for
17,000 hours in front of a television camera. Is that enough for you?
That works.
And those are the people and events that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Stephanie Pawlowski. I'm Chuck Sievertson, ABC News, New York.